Welcome back to the Religions of the Ancient Mediterranean podcast. My name is Phil Harland. I'm a professor at York University in Toronto. We're continuing on in the series, The Historical Jesus in Context. This is a series that tries to find out what we can know using the methods of history about a peasant who lived in the first few decades of the first century in Galilee, an obscure Jewish peasant. In the previous episode, we began to sketch out the limited nature of our sources for studying this Jewish peasant named Jesus. We started by looking at the Greco-Roman sources and the Judean sources. Now we turn to the question of the Gospels as sources for studying the historical Jesus, as well as other Christian literature as a source for the study of the historical Jesus. I hope you enjoy this episode. So beyond the Greco-Roman sources that are very few and far between, the Judean sources that are important, but even them, there's limits to what we can find out about Jesus from them. Unfortunately for the historian, the main source we have for the study of Jesus are writings written by followers of Jesus. Unfortunately for the historian, I mean, in the sense that it would have been far better if we had similar writings detailing things about Jesus by people who didn't believe him. But the nature of history is such that rarely does anyone write something down unless they're involved in it, unless it's important to them. And we got to talk a bit about these Christian sources and the nature of these sources. Before you start trying to recreate history about some figure or some movement, you have to say, okay, what is the nature of the source I am using? What kind of writing is it? What kind of archaeological artifact is it? What can I find out from that type of archaeological artifact? What can I find out from this type of writing from the Greco-Roman world? Because that question, what type of evidence is it? What kind of writing is it? Is essential to ask. You can't go straight to getting information historically from a document without asking, what kind of thing is it? Any historian studying any period has to ask that. Now, in Christian sources, our earliest evidence that has anything to do with Jesus are the letters of Paul. If only Paul cared at all about the historical Jesus. This may surprise you, but he doesn't. What I mean by Paul doesn't care about the historical Jesus is when you read through Paul's letters, rarely does he refer to anything Jesus taught. Rarely does he quote Jesus. Rarely does he discuss anything that Jesus did during his life. Paul is disinterested in the peasant Jesus, disinterested in what historians call the historical Jesus. It's unfortunate for us, because it's our earliest evidence for anything to do with Jesus. What we have there are letters written from Paul, a particular Judean, who went out into the Mediterranean world and started saying that Gentiles, Greeks and Romans, need to follow the Judean God and need to accept the fact that the Judean God sent this figure Jesus, and that this figure Jesus was soon going to come back again and save them from a coming catastrophe. This was his main message. The whole focus of Paul's talk of Jesus is about the death and what Paul perceives to be the resurrection of Jesus. That's what Paul obsesses about, death and resurrection. Doesn't really care at all, it seems. At least his letters don't suggest it. Doesn't care at all about the historical Jesus. Doesn't care at all about that actual peasant Jesus and what his life was and what he taught, at least in terms of quoting it, he doesn't. We're in a difficult position, aren't we? Our earliest sources for Christianity, our earliest sources for anyone who follows Jesus, happen to be disinterested in what we as historians now want to know about the peasant from Galilee. We can't blame them. Maybe we can be a bit picky as historians. Why didn't Paul at least say a few things about what he knew about what Jesus taught if he did know much? We could complain like that, but we've got what we've got. And they had different interests. The letters were written to address a particular group of Jesus followers and try and help them out, is how Paul was seeing it, right? There were different purposes there. He wasn't writing to tell us about Jesus. He was writing a real letter to real people to try and help them out or to combat their views over against his. And we're going to learn about that next term a whole lot about Paul's letters. So our earliest sources, they come from the 50s CE and perhaps the 40s, Paul's letters, and maybe a bit into the 60s. But they don't give us much. Let me just quickly say something they do give us. I said rarely does Paul refer to anything that Jesus taught or did. There are three main references that Paul makes to something that Jesus said. They happen to occur in the letter to the Corinthians, the one that is now labeled 1 Corinthians in your New Testament. Let me just mention them. Chapter 7, when he's writing to the Corinthians about the issue of marriage, and some of the Corinthians don't believe you should not be married. In order to follow Jesus, you should not be married. Paul agrees with them, mostly, but he goes into some qualifications. He happens to mention what Jesus taught about divorce, that you shouldn't divorce. Another one is when Paul's dealing with the fact that he has a certain practice in how to support his activity. He works with his hands and engages in an occupation to financially support his traveling around to spread news of the Judean God and the son that the Judean God sent. So he supports himself financially. Other followers of Jesus who travel around get supported by the people who are joining. What does Paul do? He actually refers to a teaching of Jesus, and that is that a worker is worthy of pay. He paraphrases something Jesus said, namely that Jesus taught that you should be supported financially by the people who you're teaching. And what does Paul say? Well, I don't follow that. So one of the few times when Paul refers to a saying of Jesus, it doesn't matter much for the historical Jesus what I'm about to say, but I mean, just to mention it, Paul actually does something different than what the saying of Jesus says. The final one is about the Eucharist, about the Lord's Supper, about the meal that the early Christians had at Corinth to remember Jesus. And so you can look at that later as well in chapter 11 of 1 Corinthians. That's where there's the actual quotations that if you go to church today, you might sometimes hear that read, where Paul is claiming to quote Jesus about the bread being a remembrance of Jesus and the blood being a remembrance of Jesus. The fact of the matter is, writings that have later been labeled Gospels remain our primary source for the historical Jesus. But there's all kinds of problems, historically, with using them. The nature of the sources limits what we can find out. First, let me say something very quickly about where what we now call the Gospels came from, and then I got to say something about what kind of writing there are so that you know why it's problematic to use them to reconstruct what a peasant did in first century Galilee. The earliest followers of Jesus were largely illiterate. The vast majority of the population in Judea, in Israel, in Galilee, in Syria, in Asia Minor, in Greece, in Rome, in Italy, everywhere, the vast majority of the population were illiterate. And you can be guaranteed that most peasants are going to be illiterate, at least, people outside of cities. In the cities, you may have a higher level of literacy, but most scholars would suggest to you it would be less than 10% of the population, even in the cities, who would be literate, who would be able to read and write. So writing things is a strange thing to do in this culture. The reason you have to emphasize that to people in our culture is they're so used to things being written down or typed up that they can't conceive of the notion of why wouldn't people write it down? Why would people pass on things orally? Well, that's just the way it was. It was an oral culture. Rarely did anyone write anything down. People found techniques on how to remember and retell things and pass things on orally. Another person remembering it a different way and passing it on orally and finding different techniques on how to remember that particular story, in this case about Jesus, about what he did, and how to retell it to someone else and pass it on within the community where they live, within the group of Jesus followers where they live. Sometimes contact taking place between different groups of Jesus followers, where the traditions that are orally passed on about what Jesus did or said in one group sometimes begin to have contact with another group of Jesus followers. And then that might start to be passed on in another group, but may be passed on in a different way. And there might be a different technique again on how to remember that and how to pass it on. There may be a different interpretation of that saying of Jesus within that community that begins to be told alongside the saying of Jesus. So that the interpretation of what Jesus said, or the interpretation of things that people repeated and thought Jesus said, get appended to the actual sayings of Jesus. So interpretation starts to be built into it as things are passed on orally. These are all being passed on orally, not just so that later we'll have the Gospels and can study them in the year 2008, are they? They're passed on orally because these people believe Jesus and believe in him in a certain way. And each group might have a certain understanding that may differ from another group about why Jesus is important. And that's built into why they're retelling and how they're retelling those stories. So there's a whole lot going on before ever you have someone write something down. There's debate as to whether Jesus himself knows how to read and write. So whether Jesus the peasant was literate or not. There's debate about that. And it's sort of an unsolvable debate. But what you can say is the gospel portrayals, and we're going to get into how can we use the gospel portrayals to get at the peasant Jesus. But the gospel portrayals show Jesus reading. They have Jesus reading, for example, from Isaiah or that in Luke, Gospel of Luke, to give an example. But we're soon going to get into how do we use these as historical sources. Using the limited methods of history, can we actually, with a high level of probability, say Jesus is literate? We have to figure that out, right? It's not something we can assume because historical methods are limited. They can only say so much based on what we have. But you have a process of decades of oral transmission of the sayings of Jesus and of the deeds of Jesus, presumably, passed on within communities for the purpose of remembering him and for promoting him. You then have those few literate people who are joining these communities or who are a part of the community saying, maybe it's time to write these things down. It seems that the earliest things that were written down, perhaps, were collections of sayings, where someone decided, I'm going to sit down and write down every saying of Jesus I've heard and can remember from the ones that are circulating in my community. I'm also going to talk to my buddies in this community of Jesus followers here and find out what they remember and what they've heard are sayings of Jesus, and I'm going to write them all down as Jesus said X, Jesus said Y, Jesus said Z. Sayings collection. Then you gradually have, by the time you get the 60s and 70s CE, so a few decades later, a few of the literate people who are following Jesus saying, I'm not so satisfied with just having the sayings of Jesus, and yes, they're passed on orally within my community, and we all think Jesus is wonderful, and helps us give meaning to Jesus by retelling these things. But maybe if I told a story of Jesus, I could really show someone else what I think Jesus' importance is. That's what the Gospels are. A particular author sitting down with the materials that are available to him, oral materials and maybe some collections of sayings and other written materials that are beginning to be written down, sitting down and trying to write a narrative story. A biography is a way to describe it. There's the genre in this time period, beyond Christianity, there's a genre known as the bios, the life. It's a genre of literature, a type of writing. Sometimes it's enveloped within historiography, within ancient history writing, but it's a type of writing, a biography. And it seems that the Gospels are instances of Christians writing biographies of Jesus. Biographies are never disinterested attempts to list objectively everything that a figure did. A biography in the ancient sense is always invested in what it's the story of a figure it's telling. It's always interested in moralizing. It's always interested in convincing people to behave a certain way. It's always interested in trying to say you should view this figure in this way or that. And I know someone else who wrote a biography, but I disagree with how they portray the figure. This is how you should understand Jesus, or this is how you should understand Alexander the Great. So the Gospels are instances of a wider phenomenon within the Greco-Roman world, biographies. And they're written by very interested people who are trying to portray Jesus in a particular way to advocate you understanding him in that way, to convince you that you should see Jesus as the new Moses, or to see Jesus as the new Elijah, or to see Jesus as the Son of Man from Daniel, what have you. So the Gospels each have their own particular story of the life of Jesus told in a particular way. So these are biographies and by nature will be value-driven. They're about moralizing, about trying to convince people to understand that figure in a particular way. So just by the fact they're biographies, they're going to be that. Whether they're written by a Roman, about Alexander the Great, whoever they're being written about, those are all moralizing as well. Trying to convince you to think of a certain figure in a certain way. So the Gospels fall into that camp. On top of that, they are written by people who think Jesus is extremely important. For these authors of these particular biographies, Jesus is like a major, major figure, maybe the most major figure ever. So they're very invested in this portrayal of the life of Jesus. even maybe perhaps more so than some biographies are. Sure, you'll find some parallels in how those other biographies do that. And the way that scholars put it sometimes, and I don't always use this term, but I use it just to help you understand it, is scholars will distinguish between the historical Jesus, that peasant in Galilee that we are now trying to get at in the next few lectures, that's very difficult to get at using historical methods, they distinguish that from the Christ of faith, namely the portrayal of Jesus you get in these particular biographies of Jesus. The image of Jesus you get, the impression you get of who Jesus is from reading through all of Mark is the Christ of faith in the terminology that some scholars use. And you're going to have a different Christ of faith impression from reading Mark than you're going to get from reading Matthew, than you're going to get from reading Luke. There's going to be commonalities across the board, but there's differences in each case as well. So they're very much invested, and this causes a problem for using them as sources for getting at that peasant Jesus. We can't just quickly flip to Mark chapter 2 and say, okay, what did Jesus do? What did the peasant Jesus do? We can't do that. We're stuck. Our sources are such that they don't facilitate getting to the peasant Jesus. On top of that, I wanted to mention this last little issue here that's related. And that is that these biographies are written by real people in a real community. They're not just some guy living off on his own, oh, I'll write a biography. Usually, authors of the documents that are later called the Gospel, Mark, Gospel, Matthew, Gospel, Luke, these authors were belonging to a community who really thought Jesus was important. They had a particular understanding of who Jesus was, and they wanted to tell others that this is the way to understand Jesus. They're writing it for other people to use in the community where they lived. Perhaps they even anticipated once in a while, maybe, that the writing they were going to give to their community might end up in some other group of Jesus followers as well, and used by them as well. What we can know historically from the Gospels the most is the time of the author. We can know the most about the author of the Gospel of Matthew and the community he's writing to. We can know far less and hardly much at all about the peasant Jesus a few decades earlier in Galilee. So historically, and we'll do this later, we'll study the Gospels as portraits of Jesus. And they give us glimpses into what some of the early Christians were thinking about Jesus. So we can study the early Christians through the Gospels far easier than we can study the peasant Jesus through the Gospels. Do you get it? They're great historical sources for studying the time in which they're written, the late first century, for studying the early Christians who wrote them, for understanding what those Christians thought about Jesus, how they interpreted Jesus. They're great sources historically for that. They're not so great for going that extra step back to that peasant Jesus. Do you see the distinction? Beyond the Gospels that ended up being narratives, biographies in the New Testament, we also have isolated sayings of Jesus that have been discovered on papyrus, on paper, that didn't end up happening to be in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And we have now external sources that weren't in the New Testament before. The Gospel of Thomas is a very good example of a document that is important to use in studying the historical Jesus in some scholars' view. It's a collection of the sayings of Jesus, the Gospel of Thomas, discovered in the 1940s in Egypt. I want to say more about that, but we're running out of time, so let me just say something about what we're going to delve into fully in the tutorial today. And that is, we also need to know, now that we know that the Gospels are biographies and we can't use them as straight history, we also need to know what is the relationship among the Gospels literarily. There is clearly, when scholars study this, very clearly a literary relationship between Matthew, Mark, and Luke. This is why they're called the Looking Together Gospels, the Synoptic Gospels, the Looking Together Gospels. The synoptic problem is about solving what is that literary relationship between Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And we'll discuss that fully in our tutorial and explain the different theories that have been put forward about who wrote first and who used what source between Matthew, Mark, and Luke. That's important to know to get at the historical Jesus.
For those of you listening to the podcast who want to learn again more about the synoptic problem and the literary relationships among Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you'll need to go back to an earlier podcast, podcast 2.1, which was titled Introduction to the Gospels as Portraits of Jesus. That particular podcast will give you at least a sketch of some of the key issues regarding the synoptic problem and the relationships among the Gospels that are important to know as a basis for studying the historical Jesus as well. That concludes this episode. I hope you'll come again. In the meantime, you can browse my website at philipharland.com.
I like early Christianity.
The opening music of this series in the podcast is Paradise Lost by Namgyal Lamo, a Tibetan artist. You can find her on the web, and you can buy her CDs at Amazon.